This week, we're continuing our series in Exodus. So a quick recap on last week. We looked at the story of Moses simply tending his sheep in the wilderness, and then he sees the burning bush on fire but not burning up, and God calls Moses by name. The God who sees, hears, and cares about his people steps into Moses' ordinary day with a miraculous encounter and a personal call. So this week, we pick up the story with Moses and Aaron going before Pharaoh. Now, I'm going to read bits of the passage as we go, but I'm going to give us a summary and overview first, because I think if I read it, if I read the entire passage, because we're all looking at Exodus 5, 1 to 7, 7, that'll take us half the morning to read through it. So, a bit of an overview. Moses and Aaron obey God and confront Pharaoh with God's command, "Let my people go." Pharaoh responds with hostility, refusing to acknowledge God, and immediately escalating the oppression. He orders the Hebrew slaves to make the same number of bricks, but now without straw, forcing them to scatter across Egypt, searching for their own straw, while still needing to make the same number of bricks as before. And the people buckle under pressure, and instead of thanking Moses for trying to help them, they turn on him in anger and despair. So Moses, overwhelmed and discouraged, cries out to God in confusion. He says this: "Why have you brought trouble on this people? And why did you send me?" His obedience seems to have made everything worse. But God answers Moses with a renewed revelation of his character and his covenant. He declares his name, Yahweh, and reminds Moses of the promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. God assures him that he has heard the groaning of his people and that he will redeem them with mighty acts of judgment. He promises deliverance, freedom, and a future despite Moses' insecurity and faltering lips. God commissions him again, appoints Aaron as his spokesperson again, and prepares them to stand before Pharaoh with courageous obedience. And that is what this talk is all about. Obedient courage. Doing what God asks, even when it's difficult or scares us. You can take them down now, too. That's fine. So today, we're going to walk through what it means to be obedient and courageous, like Moses, through Exodus 5:1 to 7:7, and in the lives of Christians more recently as well. But hopefully by the end, we'll all feel pumped up to go out and live more courageously and obediently. And if you think you're too old for this, just a quick reminder that in this passage, Moses was 80 and Aaron was 83 when they spoke to Pharaoh. So none of us have got any excuses. So let's begin Exodus chapter 5, verse 1. This is the scene where Moses and Aaron walk into Pharaoh's throne room, the most powerful man on earth at the time, and they say, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Let my people go so that they may hold a festival to me in the wilderness." Now Pharaoh appears to mock God. And in verse 2, Pharaoh's response is, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go." Pharaoh dismisses Moses. He increases Israel's suffering. And yet Moses obeys God and continues following God's instructions again and again. We pick it back up in chapter 5, verse 6. It says this: "The same day Pharaoh gave this order to the slave drivers and overseers in charge of the people. You are no longer to supply the people with straw for making bricks. Let them go and gather their own straw, but require them to make the same number of bricks as before. Don't reduce the quota. They are lazy, and this is why they are crying out, 'Let us go and sacrifice to our God.' Make them work harder for the people so that they keep working and pay no attention to lies." So with this, the Israelite leaders turn on Moses and Aaron, and they say in verse 21, "May the Lord look on you and judge you. You have made us obnoxious to Pharaoh." So can you imagine how Moses and Aaron felt? Their own people have turned against them. And sometimes obedience can mean being misunderstood by the very people that you're trying to help. In verse 22 and 23, it says this: Moses returned to the Lord and said, "Why, Lord, have you brought trouble on this people? Is this why you sent me? Ever since I went to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has brought trouble on his people, and you have not rescued your people at all." So it's clear here Moses is honest and frank with God, but he can be, because the foundation of his courage is his relationship with God. He spoke with God face to face. So we're going to leave the text for a second, and I've got a couple of rhetorical questions to ask you. Have you ever obeyed God and things got worse? I'm hearing some yeses. Have you ever stepped out in faith and felt like you failed? Well, you're not alone. Let me tell you about Robert Germain Thomas. I've got a slide for this one. In 1866, he tried to bring Bibles into Korea, a nation violently closed to Christianity. The images disappear, but that's fine. He was killed on the riverbank before preaching a single sermon. His Bibles were confiscated. Instead of burning them, officials took the pages and used them as wallpaper. And a man named Pak Yung Sik used the Bible pages as wallpaper. His walls were literally covered in scripture. Visitors read the pages. People believed. A small group began, and the first Protestant church in Korea was formed in that house. Today, Korea is split, obviously, into north and south. The north is the number one place on the persecuted church watch list. But in South Korea, there's now millions of Christians. You see, Thomas was obedient to the call in Romans 10, 14, 15, where, having just quoted Moses, the Apostle Paul writes, "How then can they call on the one they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one whom they've not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? And how can anyone preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news." You see, Thomas' mission looks like failure from a human perspective, but God was still working. See, unlike Thomas, many of us want to be called to a comfy life. In fact, we often pray for safety and comfort, but God often calls us to do things that are on the edge of our comfort zone. See, years ago, I remember seeing a surfer's t-shirt, and it said this: "If you're not living on the edge, you're taking up too much room." And I like that, but actually, in our spiritual life, the edge is often where courage and obedience take us, where we're not in control and we have to put our trust more deeply in God. Let me tell you about Dietrich Bonhoeffer. He was a young German pastor and theologian born in the early 20th century. He certainly didn't seek out comfort and safety, so you could argue he was living on the edge. He cut his visit and lecture tour in America short and returned to Germany in 1939, explaining that he could not take part in the nation's future renewal if he did not share in its trial. You see, Moses could have just walked away, having been declined by Pharaoh and scorned by his own people. In the same way, Bonhoeffer could have stayed safe in America at the start of the Second World War, but they both chose obedience to God over their own safety. Bonhoeffer saw the danger of the rise of Adolf Hitler long before people understood what was going on. And while much of the German church fell silent, or worse, aligned itself with the Nazi regime, Bonhoeffer refused to bow. He helped form the Confessing Church, a movement that declared that Christ alone is Lord and not the Führer. He preached, he wrote, he taught with a clarity that cut through the propaganda, insisting that the church must stand with the oppressed and not the powerful. And as the regime grew more violent, Bonhoeffer's obedience to Christ led him deeper into resistance. He joined an underground network helping Jews escape. He spoke out publicly when it was illegal to do so. Eventually, he became involved in a plot to resist Hitler's tyranny. not because he loved violence, but because he believed that not acting was a greater sin. He was arrested, imprisoned, and moved from camp to camp as the war drew to a close. And in the final weeks of the war, just days before liberation, Bonhoeffer was executed at Flossenbürg concentration camp. A witness said he died with brave and composed faith, praying while he walked to the gallows. See, Bonhoeffer obeyed the call, refusing to be complicit with evil. And his courage and books continue to challenge us as a church today. See, thinking about Robert Germain Thomas and Dietrich Bonhoeffer, their plans seem to have failed from a human perspective, but God's perspective is different. We're just going to pause for a second. And it's a question in this Exodus study guide that some of you may be using in your small groups. And I want us to spend up just about a minute discussing with your neighbor, why does God sometimes permit our best plans and our highest goals to go awry? That's a big question. So if you want to have a minute to discuss that with your neighbor, why does God sometimes permit our best plans and highest goals to go awry? Well, it sounds like we've all come up with some great answers, but two scriptures that come to mind for me, and many scriptures actually, but two that really stood out to me when answering this question. One was Isaiah 55, 8 and 9, which is it's written as God speaking. And it says this, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, and neither are my ways, not neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts." See, this text highlights that God knows better than us how things should work out. And he's got a plan. Another one, Romans 8:28. "And we know that all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." So this doesn't mean that everything, that every single event is good in itself, but it means that God can and does weave even hardship into his redemptive plan. Just because we obey doesn't mean everything is going to go the way we think it should. But that doesn't mean God's not working. He's present in the struggle, in the struggles, often drawing us closer to himself. See, there are so many stories of people finding God in the struggle, finding that we need him and we can't do it on our own and in our own strength. And that rings true for us as a family. If I hadn't got meningitis in 2013, while Nicola was stressed and anxious doing a PhD, Nicola would have never started the journey of searching for meaning that ultimately led us both to Jesus. We never asked for or wanted that. I didn't want a week in hospital and some of it in isolation. But I'm so glad that we did, otherwise we wouldn't be where we are today. So let's get back to Moses' struggle and see how God works in it. See, the foundation of Moses' courage and ours is God's identity, his power, his faithfulness, and covenantal commitment. This is what lets us keep going when circumstances don't match our expectations. At his lowest, when the Israelites would not listen, and Moses feared his faltering lips, as the text says, God reminded him with concrete promises. In chapter 6, verse 6, it says this. Again, these are God's words. "Therefore say to the Israelites, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. I will free you from being slaves to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm, and with mighty acts of judgment. I will take you as my own people, and I will be your God. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God, who brought you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians, and I will bring you to the land I swore with uplifted hand to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to you as a possession. I am the Lord." So God here just reinstates the promises that Moses actually already knows. And then comes what seems like a little detour in the text in chapter 6. We get an unexpected genealogy. But the genealogy roots those promises in a story stretching back generations, showing that God had been preparing this moment long before Moses stood at the burning bush. It's that assurance and those promises, not Moses' ability, that give him courage to face Pharaoh. A man who could imprison Moses, torture him, kill him, and the same spirit that steadied Moses and empowered prophets and martyrs is available to us today. Now, with that in mind, consider some of these both old and more recent examples of obedient courage. I've actually got a long list here. I had a much longer list because there's so many people who've been obediently courageous to God's call. So Martin Luther King Jr., a Baptist pastor, that's a good start, and leader of the American Civil Rights Movement, who confronted racial injustice with nonviolent protest and prophetic moral clarity, ultimately giving his life for the cause of equality. An ancient one, Nathan the prophet, who courageously confronted King David with the truth of his sin and calling the king to repentance. Sojourner Truth, born into slavery and later freed, this evangelical abolitionist and women's rights activist spoke truth to power. Harriet Tubman, a devout Christian who repeatedly risked her own life to lead hundreds of enslaved people to freedom. William Wilberforce, an evangelical member of parliament who was persistent, a principled campaigner. He helped bring about the abolition of the British slave trade. Corrie ten Boom, a Dutch Christian who hid Jews from the Nazis, survived Ravensbrück concentration camp, and afterwards travelled the world testifying to forgiveness and God's faithfulness. There's actually a brilliant story about her where she actually shook the hands of one of the prison guards at Ravensbrück. And one of my favourite stories, which I was unaware of until earlier this year, Blandina, the martyr of Lyon. She was a teenage slave girl who defied the Roman Empire. She was small, frail, and weak. See, thinking about this story, she's a child, she's a female, and she's a slave. And back then, I mean, you couldn't find anyone with sort of less status in society. The authorities assumed she would be weak and she'd break first. And they tortured her repeatedly, but she would not deny Christ. She kept saying, "I am a Christian and we commit no wrongdoing." So they hung her to a stake in an arena for wild beasts. But the animals refused to touch her. In the end, they whipped her, they burnt her on a hot iron chair, and finally they threw her to a bull and she was killed. But eyewitnesses said, as they looked on, she looked like Christ on the cross. Encouraging others with her resolve, she had nothing but faith, and it was enough to galvanize and inspire Christians for generations. And actually, look, 1,800 years later or more, and we're still talking about it. You see, the list of those who've acted with obedient courage could go on and on. So my question is, what's the challenge for us today? Well, I'm glad you asked. I think here's the question to consider. How could we step out in faith more? Not recklessly or foolishly, but courageously and obediently. Where is God nudging you? Maybe he wants to speak to someone about Jesus. Maybe to forgive someone. To serve somewhere. To give something. To take a risk for the kingdom. See, sometimes God may ask us to take risks, and if he's calling us to step out of our comfort zone, maybe that's the opportunity to grow in being courageous. I think if we're honest with ourselves, lots of us like the idea of being courageous, but not many of us want to put ourselves in situations that require courage. I always find it helps to add personal stories into sermons. And this has been really challenging for me because I've really struggled to think of a personal story where I've really been courageous. I was discussing it with Nicola. Well, I've done things like, you know, I've run an alpha course at the Carpenter's Arms, a male's drug and alcohol rehab, and I've been into prison and stuff. But that just feels like, that doesn't feel like courage. That's not got me out of my comfort zone. So I've really been praying, well, okay, God, how do you want me to step out of my comfort zone? Because those things are great things to do, but they're within my comfort zone. So I was thinking of a story, and I couldn't think of one, but then, last week, I was going for a walk at lunch with my wife, Nicola, down the canals, and we were admiring all the lovely goslings. And I was talking to her, and suddenly, she wasn't next to me, and she was like 20 metres back. I was like, what's up? And she was essentially being hissed at by aggressive geese. And I thought, here's my chance to be courageous. So I weaved through the geese, and they were hissing quite aggressively. And I held her hand, and we walked through, and we got through the geese. That's my act of obedient courage this week. Maybe God's building me up to something more. But joking aside, when we ask God for courage, do you think he's just going to zap us with courage and make us more courageous? Or is he going to give us opportunities to be courageous? See, I don't think courage is a lightning bolt. It's a muscle. And God grows it through opportunities. But those opportunities to train the courage muscle only come when we step out in obedience. You know, the heroes we talked about today, Moses, Martin Luther King, Nathan, Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman, William Wilberforce, Corrie ten Boom, Blandina, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and Robert Jermaine Thomas, they weren't superhuman. They were ordinary people with extraordinary obedience. And the same God who strengthened them is the God who strengthens us.